Hello, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat number 10,807. Not really. What is it? About 148. And I want to remind you, incidentally, that, you know, number 17 or number 58 or whatever is just as relevant. Take the time to look at the previous ones with all the different questions, my opening comments. And of course, I want to welcome back Otto, who missed his first Fireside Chat, well, since he began. No, I don't think he ever missed one. Once he started, did he start with number one?
No.
Okay, but once he started, he's never missed one. He missed it because he had surgery last week, as I explained to you at the time, and it was a bizarre reason, but it is what it is. He ate corn on the cob, and with the cob. And the reason he ate corn on the cob was that we have two giant tortoises who do eat corn on the cob. Anyway, for whatever reason, the first time in 10 years he ate it, it hurt his intestine. He needed a surgery immediately, and he's doing fine. In fact, he's so special. His head was on the other side. As soon as we got ready to start the broadcast, he turned around so you could see him. You are the man. It is great to have you back, Otto. Is he reacting at all? Yeah. That's my boy. All right, everybody. All is normal with Otto in the picture. So, as you know, I just offer some thoughts at the beginning. It's not rehearsed. There's no teleprompter, which, by the way, is risky, obviously, because if you really say what's on your mind and it's spontaneous, anything can happen. Which is, however, the beauty, because that's real. That's real life. That's, we speak to each other without teleprompters. So I often go over the topic with Megan, and she tells me what's on especially young people's minds. And I guess freedom and equality are big things, and I need to talk to you about, because they're really, really important. There were two revolutions in the end of the 18th century, the American Revolution and the French Revolution. American 1776, the French 1789, very close to each other. The French Revolution and the American Revolution emphasized different values. They emphasized some of the same, but the essential difference was different. The American Revolution was about liberty. That's why the French gave us, not themselves, the Statue of Liberty. And the French Revolution emphasized equality. Now, you have to understand that the American Declaration of Independence also emphasized equality, but there's a very big difference. The American Revolution recognizes that we are all created equal by our Creator, by God. So in front of God, we're all equal. And in front of the law, we're all equal. But that's it. In the French Revolution, we were all to be equal, not just in front of the law, not just in front of God. In fact, they didn't care much for God. It was a secular revolution. Ours was a God-centered one. Ours, that is, the American. But they wanted equality of result. That's why they would call each other some variation of the word comrade. All left-wing revolutions ended up with the word comrade. We're all the same. We're all equal. We're all comrades. Even Stalin, who could kill you just by flicking his fingers, he was called Comrade Stalin. And there you had equality. Now, let me explain something. Equality of result means the end of freedom. You cannot have equality of result and freedom at the same time. I have mentioned this, I know, in the past, because I know the analogy I gave, that, you know, with equality of result, a football player would not make more than a teacher, would not make more than a doctor or a sanitation worker, right? in true equality, everybody would make the same living. But if everybody made the same living, that means that you decreed it. You forced it on society. In a free society, a quarterback or a shortstop in baseball or a goalie in hockey, they, or soccer, if you will, I have no problem mentioning soccer, though I'm American, because a lot of you are watching around the world where soccer is the sport. That's fine with me. Goalies make more money than doctors. Now, why is that? Doctors save lives. Goalies don't. They save games. It's a big difference between a game and a life. But a free society allows that to happen. In a free society, your amount of work and your talent and your luck, all of them play a role in life, determine where you will end up. Whereas in an egalitarian society, everybody gets the same salary and the same benefits and so on. America wanted people to be free. So why doesn't everybody want to be free? Why would people prefer equality to liberty? It's a very tough question to answer because I don't relate to it at all. I have no issue with people earning 10 times, 50 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more than me. I never cared. I just wanted to be free. I wanted to make my own life. But not everybody wants to do that because the desire to be taken care of is much greater than the desire to be free in most people. This is incredibly important. Liberty is a value. The human instinct is not to be free. It's to be taken care of. But then you're not free. That's the way it works. You take care of yourself, which is the second reason people are not crazy about freedom. It means I am responsible for me. And that is a burden. Because if you don't succeed in life, I don't mean don't succeed by don't make a lot of money, just don't succeed. People understand what that could mean. You end up a lost soul, if you will, a loser in the vernacular. That's right. But then you are responsible in the vast majority of cases. Now, there are cases where you're not responsible. Clearly, we understand that, where some horrible disease has taken you over or you have been hurt terribly by a criminal. I mean, we understand that. And then society has to come in and help you. We fully understand that. The American ideal was this. One, I take care of me. Two, I take care of my family. Three, I take care of my community. The American ideal was that the state doesn't have to take care of anyone because we will. We, the members of the Rotary Club, the members of the church, the members of the Bible Society, whatever it might be, we will take care of the community. And they did. To this day, Americans are the most charitable people in the world per capita. Why are Americans far more charitable, give far more of their income than Europeans? Why? Because Europeans were taught the socialist ideal that the state takes care of everyone. Americans were taught you take care of your community and certainly your family. It was considered actually a shame to have the state take care of you. You mean your family didn't take care of you? You didn't take care of you? Your community didn't take care of you? And of course, you yourself are number one. That's the ideal. That's what free people do. They take responsibility for their lives. But that word responsibility is a dirty word to human nature. It's one of the most beautiful words in the English language, but it's a dirty word to human nature. Human nature is I want to be taken care of, not I want to take responsibility for. That's the reason liberty is a value, not an instinct. It means I am responsible for my life. I have to take care of myself. This notion, the state will take care of your health, The state will take care of your education through college. The state will take care of, and then you fill it in. Now there is actually a movement. The state will take care of your home, of your rent. There was an article just recently, just in the last week, in Teen Vogue, that private property is an evil idea. No one should own anything. That's the logical culmination, because as soon as you own something, first of all, you're responsible for what you own. And secondly, it means that I might own more than you. And there is a deep resentment of those who have more than I. I don't have that. That's the reason I made such videos. I made a 5-minute video on every one of the Ten Commandments. The 10th is do not covet. Do not want what belongs to another. Everything okay, Migo? Good boy. He's listening. He's into it today. He usually sleeps through my talks. Good man. That's why the 10th commandment says, do not covet what belongs to your neighbor, their house or their animals, their spouse, that belongs to somebody else. Don't yearn to have it. The basis of socialism and communism is I yearn to have. Why God's earth? That goes off, beats me. The essence of the left-wing view of the world is I am bothered that others have more than I. But then there's something wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with someone having more than you. There is if they stole it, but not if they earned it legally and ethically. Just the way it is. This generation of Americans has not been taught the value of liberty because you've been taught by teachers on the left and schools on the left, media on the left. And for some reason, they don't value liberty. They certainly don't value liberty when it comes to speech. We believe in free speech, they say, except for hate speech. But that's absurd because whatever people don't like, they call hate speech. I'm a Jew, and I remember when I was a kid, Nazis marched, real Nazis, not people who were called Nazis by people on the left to simply dismiss them. Real Nazis with real swastikas marched in a Jewish neighborhood outside of Chicago called Skokie, where Holocaust survivors, people whose relatives were gassed and burned by the Nazis. And Jews did not object to the Nazis marching. They hated them with all of their fiber, but they were Americans and believed that even Nazis, that's the ultimate hate speech, even Nazis had the right of speech in the United States of America. This is dying. The left never, ever, anywhere on earth, the left has taken power. Not liberals. I always distinguish between liberals always fought for free speech, and the left has always fought against free speech. That's why this all this stuff, oh, hate speech, please, that's just a way of suppressing speech. That's all it is. So now you have truth checkers at Facebook and Twitter and Google and Instagram and YouTube. And, you know, we don't want misinformation. Well, one man's misinformation is another man's information. The way to correct misinformation is with correct information, not by suppression. The Catholic Church thought that Galileo was giving misinformation in the Middle Ages when he said that the earth went around the sun. Everything okay, Otto? Good. He's very lively tonight. The surgery definitely worked, I gotta say. Well, he's just moving around? It's fine with me. Sometimes people wonder if it's a stuffed animal, so tonight he's proving he's very much alive. In fact, I can smell how alive he is, but it's another feature of the evening. Happily, they have not developed a way for odors to permeate video. So I have to live with it, and you don't. Whew. It's okay, I can handle it. Partially, I can handle it because I'm somewhat used to it. Otto, you're a giant. Crack me up. Crack a lot of people up. America's most famous dog, I think. Anyway, this misinformation thing, it's just incredible. This is what all of those who suppress speech said. It's misinformation. I gave you the example in the medieval church. Galileo was misinformation. The left is the same as the medieval church, except there's one big difference. The medieval church did some good, and I'm not aware of any good that the left does. I'm aware of good liberals have done, conservatives have done, but not the left. And this this suppression on the, in the name of misinformation, that's very dangerous stuff. When you have physicians who are saying that a certain drug, which has been safely used for 50 years, can help people against COVID, and you say that's misinformation, but these people are doctors and epidemiologists. One of the leading epidemiologists in the country, a man named Dr. Risch, wrote in Newsweek and was on my radio show and other shows and speaking about the immense benefits of hydroxychloroquine, and it's shut down. It's called misinformation. You mean all the doctors who believe in it are misinformed? What, do we now take a vote? How many scientists are pro and how many scientists are against? That's how we now determine what's misinformation? Or who the New York Times agrees with, or the New York Times doesn't agree with. Even scientists are shut down if they differ. The vast majority of truths in history were believed first by a minority, almost never by a majority. Are we going to vote scientific truth in? Is that it? It's like a vote. How many epidemiologists believe in hydroxychloroquine? How many don't? That's not how you do it. You have honest debate. All these people would debate, but I don't know who's going to debate against them. All right. It's everything. And you know why? There's one more reason that a lot of people don't value freedom. It's because they take it for granted. When you lose it, then you'll value it. I don't want you to lose it. All right. We go to our video question. Take it away.
Hello, Mr. Prager. I am Devin. I am 20 years old from Atlanta, Georgia. And my question for you today is this. Deuteronomy 30, verse 6 says, "The Lord your God will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants so that you may love him with all your heart and with all your soul and live." My question for you is, what is the Jewish interpretation of that statement? What does it mean to circumcise your heart? Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think it's my first Bible question in all of these 140-something sessions. Well, very nice. By the way, I will be answering that with the next volume of the Rational Bible. Devin, I hope you're reading my commentary on the Bible. I hope you all are, because once you understand it, you'll know why it was the most important book ever written and why it will change your life. It's called The Rational Bible. I will have five volumes out. The third one is coming out, and it is that book, the fifth of the first five, Deuteronomy, it's called. And the phrase of circumcise something is used about 30 times in the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible. And the original circumcise is the circumcision that Abraham performed on himself and then on his child. And Jews have been performing it on their male children at the age of 8 days for 3,000 years. When I did it to my two boys, I mean, I had a professional do it. I didn't do it. But when I had it done, I will tell you something. A, I don't easily cry, except oddly enough, I always well up in tears when I hear great music. I can't help it. It's a very strange reaction. But otherwise, I don't cry often. And I've cried only twice at a religious proceeding. And it was the two times I had my 8-day-old sons circumcised. The thought that I was connecting to 3,000 years of history, 3,000, uninterrupted, and where I knew that Jews had done this at the pain of death, that if they were caught doing it, the anti-Jewish regime and under which they lived would have them killed. And I could do this in America openly, and with my parents present to see their grandson circumcised. It was very moving to me. But anyway, circumcision, which in that case is the removal of the foreskin, it means to remove a barrier, in a sense. And the understanding here is I'm removing a barrier to your loving me, the one you quoted of Deuteronomy 30, verse 6. That's what it would really mean. I will remove the barrier to your loving me, which is very powerful because there is a barrier to loving God. I have one. I wrote an essay in my book of essays called Think a Second Time. And if you don't know of the book, it's got 44 essays on 44 different subjects. One of them is my argument that to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your might is the hardest law in the Bible. I don't find believing in God difficult, but I do find loving God difficult. The amount of human suffering and injustice built into the world has made it difficult for me. I'm preoccupied with human suffering. That is my preoccupation since I was a child. That's why I hate evil. Ironically, my favorite verse in the Bible is, those of you who love God must hate evil. If you don't hate evil, you don't love God. I love that. So I figure since I hate evil, I must love God. But I do find it difficult because of all the suffering. Not mine. I've been blessed. I have suffered, but nothing comparable to what so many others have. Okay. Again, it's the Rational Bible. Read the reviews on Amazon. There are 1,000 reviews. And you'll see how it's touched people's lives. If you like the Fireside Chat, you will love the Rational Bible. And Still the Best Hope, my book explaining the left and explaining America. Still the Best Hope. James, 48, Frankfort, Illinois. Hello, Dennis and Otto. You hear that, Otto? I'm interested on your thoughts about parents who want to be their children's friends. I think they need to be the children's parent. 3 exclamation points. I couldn't agree with you more. Your children can always find friends, but you are their parents. One of the biggest problems of the last 2 generations is that parents have wanted to be their children's pals rather than their parents. It's easy to find pals. It's hard to find a father and a mother. That's what parents need to remember. And they want to be their pals because they don't want the responsibility of being the authority. Because that is, it's a burden. To be a parent is a burden. To be a leader is to be a burden. But you're supposed to be a leader to your children. Also, they want to be loved by their children. Every parent wants their children to love them. I'm a parent. I want my children to love me. But you cannot pursue being loved by your children. You have to pursue being respected by your children. Unlike your spouse and friends, you should pursue being loved by your spouse. Try to be loved by your spouse every day. You'll have a great marriage. You'll have great friends if you work on them loving you. I want my friends to love me. I want my wife to love me. That's different from wanting your children, especially when they're young. Then you can't be guided by, I want my children to love me. Because if you do your job right, they won't love you the whole time. Or as I always used to say, they're going to hate you anyway, so you might as well do the right thing. That's just dark humor, but you get my point. Ethan Van Meter, 15 years old, Maryland. What are your thoughts on China's increased aggression in Hong Kong? I'll tell you one thought I do have, that a 15-year-old even knows that China is aggressive towards Hong Kong is impressive. My suspicion is you're homeschooled. Let me know if I'm right. I wonder how many high schools in the United States of America are teaching Chinese aggression against Hong Kong. So I assume you're being homeschooled, the fact that you even raised the question. It is such a serious and bad thing. They have just arrested. They may arrest him for the rest of his life. He's 72 years old, the biggest publisher in Hong Kong. And they're taking it over. Britain made a terrible mistake under the great, and she was great, Margaret Thatcher. They had a 100-year deal from 100 years earlier. I don't remember what year it was. It was in the, I guess, the 1980s or 1970s. So the deal was made in 1870 or 1880 that in 100 years, Britain would give back Hong Kong to China. But the government they made the deal with in the 19th century was not the communist government. And I knew then, how are you going to give this back to a communist government? That means they're going to suppress freedom in Hong Kong. They said, oh, no. It's going to have its own way of life. Yeah, they did for a while, but eventually communist is a communist because, as I said, leftists do not ever support freedom. And the poor people of Hong Kong are being suppressed and much of the world is ignoring them. By the way, you know what flag they marched with in Hong Kong in the demonstrations against communist Chinese government? One flag in the world. Which one do you think they took to represent liberty? The American flag. The one they're burning in the protests. The people who hate freedom. And they're right. If you hate freedom, you hate the American flag. That's correct. And if you love freedom, you love the American flag. That's true for an American. It's true for a Chinese in Hong Kong. Marcos, 34, Montevideo. I spoke in Montevideo, by the way, many years ago for the Young Presidents Organization. I had a wonderful time in your country. Hi, Dennis. Do you think leftism will eventually collapse or will we have to fight it, hopefully nonviolently? It seems to me it is unsustainable the more power they accumulate socially and economically. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. God bless Otto, you, and all the team at PragerU. What do you say, Otto? Do you feel blessed? He certainly is, I'll tell you that. Well, nothing eventually collapses. Because as you see, communism collapsed. And look at the new generation in America, a generation that hasn't a clue what communism did. If bad collapsed forever, we'd have a beautiful world. That's why every generation has to teach good values to the next generation, or the bad stuff comes up again. And for two generations, young Americans have not been taught the good stuff. They've not been taught this is right and this is wrong. They've been taught, how do you feel about it? And that's not a good way to determine right and wrong. And so with that, I'm Dennis Prager. This is Otto. This is the Fireside Chat. Thank you for being with me. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these Fireside Chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.